You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
At Civic Media and at Courier Newsroom, the parent company of Up North News, we were given a mission in 2025 following the November 2024 election of Donald J. Trump as 47th President of the United States. And that was not to dwell too much on the negative aspects because that would become tiring. And yet at the same time, we don't want to ignore the things that Trump and MAGA Republicans are doing that can be harmful to individuals, if not to the country as a whole. So we've been working to find balance in the way that we provide national news to you. Our main emphasis is always on Wisconsin news, Wisconsin politics, Wisconsin people, events, stories. So when we do talk about national politics, we want to find that right balance of information. And yet, at the same time, we want you to keep listening. We don't want you to become overwhelmed. So to that end, and in honor of Greg Bach's final full-time shift on this show, we've asked Greg to punctuate the following segment here with what are called hot buttons. Now, Greg has, I believe, 26, did you say, hot buttons?
Correct.
Which are buttons that these are preloaded with clips that we use all the time. Greg, would you provide just one example of a hot button that you can drop in? The obvious one like would be a rim shot, but what else do you have handy there?
Like when during the secret show, which is on the live stream, when we read out the words of people who disagree and are falsely critiquing us, I might say something like,
there you go.
That's a perfect example of a hot button.
Yes, which he has been training young Parker Olson in, because Parker will take over the hot buttons come Monday, as Jimmy Buffett likes to say. And so with that said, and this was, trust me, it's not rehearsed or prearranged. That's going to become obvious over the next few minutes here. But I've simply asked that Greg uses hot buttons one last time as I tell you about a couple of different stories here. Our first one is Trump pardons criminals with MAGA credentials or big money. This coming from...
That's what I was going to do.
Seems like an apt place to begin. From Axios. Two reality stars, a MAGA-aligned sheriff, and a former nursing home executive with a well-connected mother recently joined the list of President Trump's clemency recipients. Though it's early in his second term, Trump's pardons mark a continuation of his first-term trend of granting clemency to political loyalists. He's not the first president to pardon political allies, but his clemency actions signal strong messages about his priorities, starting with the controversial avalanche of pardons for the January 6 rioters and commutations for members of extremist groups, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and since then, several loyalists and wealthy allies have received relief for white-collar crimes. And so Trump said on Tuesday he plans to pardon reality TV stars Todd and Julie Chrisley, who were convicted of tax evasion and bank fraud in 2022. Savannah Chrisley, who's been advocating for her imprisoned parents' release, spoke at the Republican National Convention last summer. Trump has also commuted the sentence of Gangster Disciples co-founder Larry Hoover. He has pardoned Republican and former Congressman Michael Grimm, who was convicted of aiding in preparing a false tax return. The president has granted clemency to convicted former Connecticut Governor John Rowland and rapper NBA Youngboy. Trump in April also pardoned Paul Walczak, a former nursing home executive who was sentenced to 18 months in prison in order to pay more than $4 million in restitution for tax crimes. Walczak's pardon has received particular scrutiny because of the political activity of his mother, Elizabeth Fago, a Republican donor who recently attended a $1 million per person fundraising dinner at Mar-a-Lago. So if you're a convicted criminal in prison, Just have your mom attend $1 million-a-person fundraiser dinner, and you too can get your boy pardoned out of prison. Trump also issued a pardon for former Virginia Sheriff Scott Jenkins, whom a jury convicted of felony fraud and bribery charges last year. Again, fraud and bribery, and yet Trump put a post up that said that Jenkins and his family had been dragged through hell by a corrupt and weaponized Biden DOJ and contended the cases were politically motivated by a weaponized Justice Department.
Yeah, some of these are going to be the same.
Let's see. During Trump's first term, he gave clemency to several allies, including Steve Bannon, Paul Manafort, Charles Kushner. Trump has already signed dozens of pardons since taking office. Let's see. Alice Marie Johnson, who was pardoned by Trump after having her life sentence for a nonviolent drug offense commuted under his first term, has been appointed pardon czar in Trump's second White House. As President Trump's interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, Ed Martin was remarkably blunt about intermingling Trump's political goals with the ostensibly independent actions of the Justice Department. That might have cost him his permanent gig, so leave it to Martin, who's now Trump's pardon attorney, to say the quiet part out loud about Trump's pardons, no MAGA left behind. On the other side, though, while Trump is gaining satisfaction out of these pardons, he is no fan of an emerging nickname on Wall Street mocking his on-again, off-again approach to tariffs. Trump lashed out, according to this story in USA Today, at a reporter who asked about his response to financial analysts embracing a new term called taco trade. The acronym stands for Trump Always Chickens Out. It's a jab at the president's propensity to impose or threaten steep tariffs on imports, only to later back off. Oh, I chicken out, he says. Isn't that nice? I've never heard that, Trump said, before defending his recent decision to slash tariffs on China for the next 90 days, then extend his deadline for 50% goods on the European Union until July 9th. 6 months ago, he said, this country was stone cold dead. We had a dead country. We had a country that didn't think it was going to survive. And you ask a nasty question like that, it's called negotiations. I would remind people that 6 months ago, the country was not stone cold dead. We were enjoying the greatest recovery from the pandemic of any other nation on the face of the earth. Could I pause right now just to say this guy's really good at the hot button thing? He knows what he's doing. In other news, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson says there's no amount of pressure that President Donald Trump can put on him that would get him to support the House-approved framework for a federal budget deal. Johnson made the remarks yesterday before a packed crowd at the Milwaukee Press Club.
Sure, Jan.
Johnson has emerged as one of a small number of Senate Republicans who say the measure fails to do enough to reduce the federal deficit. Johnson's been complaining about the size of the federal debt and deficits since he first ran for office in 2010. But over the past 15 years, the national debt has more than tripled.
No.
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 No. No.
No.
No. No. No. No.
Ron Johnson was bristled at the suggestion that he has failed to limit government spending and overturn Obamacare, his two longstanding campaign promises. He said, you only have so much power as a U.S. senator. Right now, I'm in a position where the ball is in our court. Only so much power as a U.S. senator, whose net personal worth has grown remarkably since he did things like putting in a tax break that helped his personal finances during the 2017 tax bill debate. The 70-year-old Republican says he has no interest in running for president. Who asked that? But
what?
He did not close the door on running for a fourth term in office. Keep in mind, in 2010, Johnson said he would serve only two terms, but then he ran again in 2022. Johnson said, I'd like to dig my heels in now, set this nation on a sustainable course, and then go home. But he says he's learned never to say never. He said he doesn't enjoy being a senator. But then he played up his role in Washington, D.C. with this quote. And again, I warn people, don't roll your eyes too heavy or you'll hurt yourself. Quote, I'm just a guy from Oshkosh, just trying to really try and save the country. Johnson complained early on in his talk, according to this Journal Sentinel article, about forces dividing the nation and the world. Like Ron Johnson. He said, this is due to people making boogeymen of other nations, leading countries to go to war with one another, and officials scaremongering about pandemics, and then taking away individuals' freedoms. Again, this is Ron Johnson saying these things. This nation needs to heal and unify, Johnson said. I think the good news here, he says, is if you think of the big things in life, taking care of your family, raising your kids the way you want to, you're having enough opportunity so you can provide for your family, for your provide for your retirement. Those are goals we can all agree on. And yet Johnson said he isn't ready to avoid all conflict. He has also talked about opening a probe into former President Joe Biden's health condition. The well-known conspiracy theorist says in this Journal Sentinel article, I want to find out what happened, report to the American public, and to put on notice future vice presidents and cabinet members that your oath of office goes beyond your personal considerations. Your loyalty to particular persons who may unfortunately not be competent, not being able to carry out the duties of the president of the United States. That's right. Ron Johnson is saying that people should put their oath of office above their loyalty to party or their allies. Again, this is Ron Johnson who's talking. So there you go. There's Ron Johnson's comments about potentially running for a third term, still working on conspiracy theories, telling everybody we should heal and unify for a president who is putting some people in jail without charges, innocent people who didn't do anything, while he's letting out of jail people who were convicted by a jury of committing serious crimes. That's where we are on May 29th, 2025. With hot buttons provided by Greg Bach.
Gonna be May.
You want to hit like two or three more that we didn't get to? I really want these buttons to feel like they've been utilized to their fullest.
Let's see here. I didn't get to. Here.
Whiskers, will you get out of here?
There's one.
Okay. Well, Selena's not here, but yes. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Exactly. And then let's see. Blah 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 blah. And then there's actually I think I got to. Except I did flip flops for you a long time ago, but we only used it once.
Could use the flip flops there with the taco president, you know.
Oh well,
Trump always chickens.
It's
out.
A very difficult sound effect for people to go, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah, yes, I know.
And you did it admirably. So again, well done. Find that hot button for applause and give yourself some for that excellent use of hot buttons in our commentary. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us as part of your mornings, powered as always by Up North News. We have today's history lesson, as we always do, mornings here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. I'm Pat Kreitlung.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you were to go to the Capitol right now, you would see that hundreds of bills have been introduced in the Wisconsin legislature so far this session, from Assembly Bill 1 to, at last check, Assembly Bill 273. And over in the other chamber, you can go all the way up to Senate Bill 280. But one bill is missing from all those. Senate Bill 1. Republicans reserved Senate Bill 1 for their version of a state budget and tax plan, but it is still missing in action nearly 5 months into the session. So what is it Republicans actually want to do? When are we going to see what they propose? And what will Governor Tony Evers do with it once it comes to him? Now, in the past, he has used his line item veto, his partial veto powers, repeatedly to try to mold and shape the bill. But is that good enough? Or does he have to consider vetoing the whole bill and making the legislature start over? And if so, what are the pros and cons of that? A coalition of groups was in the Capitol yesterday talking about the things that really need to be in the state budget in terms of schools and healthcare and families and, you know, what those standards should be. And we are very happy to have two friends of the program here to talk more about it. Robert Craig from Citizen Action of Wisconsin, Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Robert and Heather, good morning. Thanks for being here. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Doing great. Thanks, Pat. Nice to see you.
Yeah. Heather, I saw a Facebook post. You guys had a very busy day around the Capitol, and you said you carried around a particular visual aid the whole day to try to make your point about what needs to be in the budget or where previous budgets have failed and what people want to see in this budget. So what was your core message to lawmakers yesterday?
Well, first of all, Pat, we were thrilled that over 200 people were able to join us on the day after a holiday weekend to share their concerns about the state budget with lawmakers and to call on the governor to put his name on a better budget this time around. And I carried this poster with me to remind folks that we have been to every single one of the budget hearings taking notes. And if you look at what things people cared about the most, what's best for kids tops that chart. Public education, K through college, childcare, higher ed, Medicaid expansion, and holding the line on prisons and criminal justice reform were the lion's share of the testimony. Over half of the people who spoke on one of those three subject areas. And so the people who were at the Capitol today were a critical mass, but they didn't speak for themselves. They represent the majority of concerns that were heard around the state at every single one of those budget hearings. And those are the concerns that the members of the Joint Finance Committee on the Republican side disregarded when they threw the governor's budget proposal away and went back to base. And so our concern is that the people were not heard when they raise their voices in these democratic processes. And we want to call on all of our lawmakers and the governor to listen this time around and to pass a budget that actually meets the needs of our kids and our communities and stop playing political games with the money that we trust the state to use effectively and according to our needs.
That is it's a very telling pie chart that you were showing me with, again, the topics that were brought up most in the Joint Finance Committee hearings. And Robert, as somebody who's been active on the healthcare part of it, especially as expanding Badger Care through Citizen Action, I'm sure that pie chart didn't surprise you either, even if it still seems to be a surprise to some of the lawmakers.
Well, I don't know if it's a surprise, but they entirely ignored it, Pat. So they've turned these budget hearings, which are supposed to be the legislature actually hearing from people who have take the time to go and speak to them about the budget, into just a sham where they pretend to listen and then they do what they're going to do, which is, this is an example of the decay of our democracy. And so Heather showed with that chart just where the public is that actually came to Joint Finance Committee and testified. It's overwhelming that the top issues are education funding, healthcare, especially expanding Badger Care, which is a huge common sense step we can still take. And that's not going to be, that opportunity is not being eliminated at the federal level. They took that off the table. And common sense criminal justice reform. And so since the legislature, Pat, is ignoring the people in the hearings, we brought the people to the Capitol. And this is extraordinary, Pat. You've been doing this a long time. I've never seen such a list of groups. And it was Citizen Action Wisconsin, Wisconsin Public Education Network, Wisdom. WEAC, which is a major power in Democratic politics, and its major urban affiliates, AFT Wisconsin, number of others, and the child care advocates who really got a lot of attention this cycle, coming in. I've never seen a group of groups like this come and ask a Democrat governor to change his tactics. You see, in the last three budgets, he's essentially, with some line item vetoes, signed the Republican budget in a situation where we have divided rule, in a situation where only one person was elected by the whole people, and that is Governor Evers. Since they, Pat, use every ounce of their power they can, a lot of illegitimate use, like not confirming the governor's appointments on a regular basis as a strategy. Just for one example, the governor needs to use all of his legitimate power, and that is his veto power. And that is to make it clear, set a bottom line, say that this is my bottom line, include Badger Care expansion and sufficient funding for public schools, child care, and common sense criminal justice reform does not build any more prisons. And say, I will not sign a budget that doesn't do that, that he has to do that. Otherwise, he's allowing them to get a Republican budget where this should be a compromise pact. So that's where we are. And as organizers, this is about power. So we're saying we'll be with the governor and stand behind him, all these people, Pat, but the governor needs to lead.
So if the governor were to threaten to or actually veto the whole bill, there are a couple of different ways you could go. Robert, I'll start with you and then Heather. And there is this notion that if the governor were to veto the whole thing, Republicans would just say, oh, yeah, well, then we just won't pass a budget at all. Everything will continue at the same level. It's not like government shuts down and there won't be any improvements in anything either. So is that the tactic that would keep Governor Evers and others from vetoing a bill in its entirety? And what's your answer to that potential?
It's very similar to what Chuck Schumer said when he crossed most other Democrats and voted for a Republican bill to keep the government open, which also put in place a whole lot of the changes Doge and Trump are illegitimately and illegally making. What we've seen from the Democrat grassroots, which is everyone is for democracy, not just Democrats, is that they expect leaders now to fight and to use all their leverage. And so I think it's a sign of weakness to say, oh, I couldn't veto the budget because it could put in place a worse budget. It has to be used as leverage to force a negotiation and to force public attention on these popular issues that the legislature is against and is trying to block, because then they face much more consequences at the ballot box, the only real Democratic accountability. The other thing, Pat, is, what I heard at the Capitol yesterday, they're talking about putting most of their budget in separate appropriations bills with no line item veto and putting forward only a base budget so they can avoid the governor's line item veto powers in a budget. So we're in a situation where they're playing hardball anyway and are acting against all previous norms. The governor's got to be willing to stand and fight. But part of this, Pat, is if he lays this bottom line, the public will know who is blocking fair funding for public schools, who is blocking healthcare for 90,000 more people and more, getting more money for doing that, child care, which everyone needs and wants to. And so I think that that's the only thing that can work in a democracy, that signing a Republican budget and then declaring it some kind of victory actually harms the public understanding of what is really going on.
Heather, I feel like the sentiment for this really increased after this last go-round where the governor agreed to an increase in local aid and in funding for local schools, public schools, but the amount of money that went to the voucher program was immense. And to some people didn't look like a compromise at all, and really has led to this notion of, you know, better to veto a bad budget than to try to fix it with partial vetoes. What are your thoughts on that, Heather?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
It's getting ready for school time here. Sorry for the background noise.
That's all right.
Yeah, you're totally right, Pat. People were really confused by the budget deal that the governor worked out last time, because while he did arrange a deal that exchanged a much needed increase to the low revenue limit ceiling, he did so in return for what turned out to be the largest expansion to privatization programs that we've ever seen in one swoop. And so this massive increase to vouchers and independent charters was not matched by a massive increase to public school funding. We saw a little lift to the low revenue limit ceiling, which, though welcome, did not even get our low spending districts up to the state average. And we saw a budget ultimately passed that didn't even provide an inflationary increase to our public schools. In fact, about 40% of school districts received less state aid in the first year of that biennial budget than they had the previous year anyway. And so that's why we have seen a record number of districts have to go to referenda in the course of the past 2 years. 419 questions, I believe, is the final count. Keep in mind that we have 421 total districts. We've had districts that have had to go again and again to voters to ask to raise taxes on themselves because the state is not paying its share. And it's just an unsustainable cycle. And this cycle of going back to base, fighting for crumbs, not getting enough, going back to base, fighting for crumbs, not getting enough, just has to stop. That cycle is not going to stop itself. And as Robert said, now we're hearing about this other layer of political games playing on top of it. And we were just headed to the Capitol yesterday to say enough. Enough is enough. Do your job. Your job is to make sure that our public schools have the resources they need so that every kid's needs can be met, and you are not meeting that obligation right now. Do better.
On YouTube, Tony writes, I saw so many photos on Facebook from the Capitol yesterday. It was amazing. And I mentioned seeing, you know, Heather in photos along with some of the folks there. Robert, you mentioned all the people that were there as well, that this really has much more of a grassroots feel than, you know, so much of the AstroTurf stuff we saw from, you know, back in the days of, you know, the Tea Party and things like that. Between that and the pie chart, Robert, I mean, you completely feel the public sentiment shifting, and with fairer maps, non-gerrymandered maps, you've got to feel better about taking this kind of a message into the 2026 election cycle, not meaning to get ahead of myself.
I hope we can get a budget, right, Pat? So if the Republicans do the right thing, then they are in a better stance in the 2026 elections. But if they're going to do what they did before, we at least want to make it crystal clear that they did it and exactly what they did so they can be held accountable. That's the only way democracy works. Softening the edges doesn't work, Pat. But what our hope is that the governor will create a very difficult environment for them politically that will actually make them do the right thing and find common ground with Governor Evers on these issues. Because as Heather says, we cannot continue this cycle over and over again. And in fact, Pat, with what the House did, the House of Representatives and their tax on Medicaid, they left the extra money for Medicaid expansion, but it sunsets the full amount, getting 95% of cover of it paid for by the federal government for 2 years, sunsets on January 1st, 2026. This is the last budget we can get the full Medicaid expansion amount. But education, school districts are at the breaking point with the referendums. Heather talking about this all the time.
Without a doubt. Head to the comment sections on Facebook and YouTube to see the links that they provided us where you can sign your name to a letter of support. Robert Craig from Citizen Action, Heather Dubois-Bornon from Wisconsin Public Education Network. Thanks so much, you guys. Appreciate all that you're doing. Earl Ingram
Thanks
coming
for
up.
Having us.
You bet. Earl Ingram coming up in our next hour along with Dan Schaefer on the Civic Media Radio Network. Talked about what's coming up on Matt and Air on Air here at 9 o'clock right after this show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I need to tell you what else is happening across the network later on. Todd Alba later on today from 2 to 4. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, he will have as a special guest Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. And then on the Maggie Dawn show coming up at 4 o'clock, Chef Greg Leon on the no taxes on tips provision in the Trump tax bill and why that really doesn't help nearly as many people as you might think. Also, Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee will be along as well, and Dr. Yoshiko Herrera from UW-Madison, a professor of political science, will join Maggie Dawn. Then on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, starting at 6 during the 7 o'clock hour, author Laura Enright will be the guest. Learn more about all of this, all of the shows, all of the stations, and much more. Head over to civicmedia.us, where you can also listen back to past episodes of all of our shows, including this one. Let's turn to the prospect of those Medicaid and SNAP benefit cuts coming in the Trump plan that, again, every Wisconsin House Republican voted for, including Derek Van Orden from the 3rd District in Western and Central Wisconsin, who weeks earlier had this strong reaction when told about how the Republican tax bill would be kicking all kinds of people off their benefits or threatening them. Here's what he said.
I want to clear the air, and I'm going to dispel some things. If you're receiving benefits from the federal government lawfully as an American citizen, your benefits are not going to be reduced by a nickel. Okay, I'm going to say it again. If you're an American citizen that is lawfully receiving benefits from the federal government, your benefits will not be reduced by a nickel. Write that down. Okay. I was raised in abject rural poverty by a single mother. We're on welfare, food stamps, where you had a stamp, stick it on a card, go to the grocery store. I had subsidized lunches and government cheese. I was the hungry child that my colleagues are talking about. Okay. Things have changed. And the same people that told you during the last budgetary cycle that Republicans are going to cut Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, WIC, SNAP, they lied to you. They lied openly to the American public. They're the same people that lied to you and are fear-mongering with hungry children and those most in need in our country. And it's unacceptable and it's despicable. This should be a nonpartisan committee. They're lying. I'm over it. Stop it.
That would be Derek Van Orden again. And he said many times since then, since the bill is passed, that anybody who claims their benefits are cut are liars. Well, since that time, obviously, there's a line that's been forming of people who would like to remind you who's the one telling the fib in this case. There's also a new ad campaign coming out from Protect Our Jobs to talk about how the Trump tax plan bill that Van Orden supported is also going to repeal clean energy investments that are going to kill something close to 2,000 jobs in his district. There's a lot to discuss here with real people who are going to feel real pain if this budget plan that Van Orden and Trump support were to pass as is. Jeremy Granger from Citizen Action joins us now, along with Sarah Ring. Jeremy, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. Yeah, doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thanks. And Sarah, where are you? Are you in Eau Claire? Where are you?
Hi, Pat. Thanks. I'm in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Okay. And in Eau Claire, Wisconsin is where Congressman Van Orden has an office. It is staffed by Brian Westrate, former chair of the Eau Claire County Republican Party, and is now an official on the taxpayer paid side of staffing that office. And there have been plenty of folks and groups that have wanted to speak with the congressman or the congressman's staff and express their concerns about what would happen if this bill were to pass as is. Jeremy, can you tell us a bit more about your most recent visit and interaction with the congressman's office?
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Yeah, I live in Eau Claire as well, and I served 6 years on the city council here up until a year ago, and so very, concerned for my community and for, folks across, Wisconsin, and in my role as the Northwestern organizer for Citizen Action of Wisconsin. And, we've been trying to engage with, Representative Van Orden, and we even did our own town hall about Medicaid specifically a couple months ago. And we had a lot of folks sharing their stories there. So we wanted to, we set up a meeting with his staff last week at the Eau Claire office, and it's really, it's right in downtown Eau Claire, so anyone can, drop by, at least try to talk to Brian Westrate or the other staff there. And we were hoping to catch him before the vote, but it ended up being the day after. It was this last Friday, and Brian Westrate knew nothing about what had just passed. And that seems to be kind of the theme in that office, is they just want to be, quote unquote, a sponge for what people have to say and don't really know anything about what's going on in Washington. And hopefully they pass it along to Representative Van Orden. But, under the bill that, Representative Van Orden was the deciding vote for the budget reconciliation bill that, you know, is now going to the Senate. That is really one of the biggest, well, I think it is the biggest redistribution of wealth, you know, proposed in American history, that really is about cutting taxes for the wealthy and cutting Medicaid as the main way of doing that. And, you know, about 13.3 million people would lose Medicaid, according to the Congressional Budget Office, including 11,000 in Representative Van Orden's district. So we wanted to be there right away, the day after the vote, to, you know, say, hey, you said you weren't going to, you promised that you weren't going to be cutting our, you know, Medicaid for folks. And he was yet the deciding vote on that, yes. 215 to 214. So we wanted to make sure that we were there to, you know, with folks that would be impacted, including Sarah, who's with us. And you know, it's extremely disappointing, but, you know, the Senate will be taking this up and then maybe changing it. And if that's the case, it would go back to the House, and we expect him to change his vote to a no vote.
You would think. Sarah, you were there you wanted to share your story. Do you mind sharing it with our listeners of the ways that Medicaid through Badger Care and other SNAP or whatever other benefits might impact you from this bill? What did you want to say to the congressman's office?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. So as Jeremy said, I shared my story with the Van Orden staffer about how, despite what Van Orden is saying publicly, these are cuts to Medicaid and the program, and will impact people like my sister Carrie, who is dependent on Medicaid. So if I could I brought the little printout. This is what I shared at the meeting, and just to give some context, this is my sister Carrie. She's standing here with her parents, our parents, my father, who is a disabled Vietnam veteran, and our mother, who has been a caregiver for my sister for the last 44 years of her life, and to my other siblings as well.
And so, it appears she's in a wheelchair here, right?
She's in a wheelchair. Okay. So she's been since birth. She was born shortly after birth. She suffered brain damage from multiple infections. So she's permanently developmentally disabled, intellectually disabled, will be that way her whole life. Medicaid is a lifesaver for my sister and our family, because we can keep her in her home and in her community because of the program IRIS. And that is a Medicaid-funded program through Wisconsin that allows us to hire and pay care workers we trust to come into my parents' home and give my sister Carrie the personal care that she needs and the supportive care that she needs. I don't know if you could tell from the photo, but my parents are aging. They are in their upper 70s. They can't physically handle my sister and you know, transfers. And, you know, it's hard for people to imagine, I think, sometimes the level of care that is needed for someone like my sister. So I usually say to people, imagine if you're caring for, you know, a 12-month-old infant or a baby. All the things you do for that baby, we do many of the same things for my sister. And what I would like to say is, you know, we have lots of issues already with the system. We are overstressed already. And the things in this bill, the provisions in this bill, and the cuts that will result to Medicaid are going to impact my sister and thousands in Wisconsin like her who are disabled. For example, the caregiver shortage has left us in our family. All of our siblings are filling in the care for my sister. It's a really precarious situation right now with, you know, if one of us gets sick in the family, my parents don't have care for my sister. The end result would be, you know, if one of us cannot step in, one of the family members cannot step in, she would go to an institution like a nursing home, where we know her care would degrade, her well-being would degrade. And we know because we have tried it over the years. We've tried many different situations, and that's what happens She doesn't get that one-on-one care that she needs. So this bill, you know, I can talk more specifically about parts of the bill and why it makes it harder for people like my sister in Wisconsin and what cuts would do. But essentially, for our family, it would likely mean Carrie going to an institution. Not to sound
so, not the bill goes a step further, that not only either cutting services, or if there are not direct cuts, there are so many new reporting requirements, aka red tape, that people would lose their benefits. But the bill goes on to force states to eliminate their own services for disabled adults, older adults, and children. There are some folks that say, well, it's not a cut because it would be, you know, we're just giving it back to the states, and the states would have that power, but the states don't have that kind of financing. And the states would also be prohibited, for example, from any new, you know, taxes on healthcare providers, for example, to finance their share of Medicaid finance costs. Jeremy, in the short time here before the break, Sarah obviously wanted to tell her story. She got to tell it here. What is it that you hope folks hearing this will do now that the bill is over in the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Senator Ron Johnson is going to be a deciding vote potentially in the U.S. Senate, and Senator Tammy Baldwin has been very much against this. So getting calls into Senator Ron Johnson's office, and also really doubling down on any U.S. House representatives would be big, because this is very likely to come back to them. I think one of the big things that I think will touch everybody in Wisconsin is that, you know, if this were to pass, about $400 million less would be coming into the state of Wisconsin to Medicaid, and coming to our, you know, hospitals and clinics and nursing homes. So like, and we've had hospital closures here in the Chippewa Valley.
Oh, we know that so well. And that's exactly what these cuts would do. It is impossible, as Van Orden would say, to make all these cuts where it would only impact people who are, say, undocumented immigrants. It's just not possible. I'm Pat Kreitler. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back on this Thursday morning, May 29th, live from Chippewa Falls. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Parker Olson is in Madison. Greg Bach is at Radio Park in Racine, where Greg Bach will later be joining Jane Matinair for a little show they like to call Matinair on Air, with all kinds of good guests and fun things for your entertainment, listening entertainment, which today includes... Well, that'd be Brittany Merlot, of course, joining you on this Thursday morning. What else you got?
We got at 9:30 every Thursday, he's here to talk about all the law in the news. The host of Amicus, a law review, Mr. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, practicing attorney currently, and just all-around good man, tie enthusiast. So he'll be here at 9:30 talking about that. He's here every Thursday. And then at 10:30, we will have sports writer from the Journal Sentinel, J.R. Radcliffe, here to break down all the news in sports. And I think we're going to be talking significantly about this resurgence in the Brewers, which we're really, really liking. And I'm going to ask him a question I asked our other guy, Paul Noonan, last week, which is the shine coming off of Pat Murphy? So he'll be on at 10:30. And yes, as you mentioned, Brittany Merlot will be here, and she'll be on at 10:20 with Weather and Wine, expounding upon the weather report she gave us just earlier. But yeah, and then of course this shouldn't be a thing at the end of the show.
I'm sorry, Weather and Wine,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, we call it that because it's Brittany Merlot. We call the segment Weather and Wine.
I see. Let me give the Robert De Niro finger wag. You see what I see what you did there, and the hot buttons are still in play. Were there, in hindsight, were there any hot buttons you didn't play during last hour's rant that you wish you could have shared with us some more?
Really couldn't make Pigeon Mama work. That's a new one. That's for,
that's, but that's, oh, for, I'm gonna Melissa.
Need that. That's, yeah, that's for Melissa. That's for, yeah. I would say, let me see here. The, I think the only one I didn't get to use was... But I'm not going to play that for long because I don't want to get hit with some sort of warning.
No,
from
you
the...
don't. You have to let that go. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And oh, I think I got through. Well, the only one is like, you know, this one is no, yeah, swearing. Nah. Yeah. And other than that, yeah, we got them all. We got them all.
Good job. Nice. All right. Yeah.
Well done. Well,
yeah. Thank you.
We say all this again in wishing Greg Buck all the best in his new endeavors, which only means he's, you know, doing more elsewhere in the building.
Well, you're, said, Pat. WBA, where are you?
Your key will still work in the building. Yeah. Parker Olson will be doing this full time from 6 a.m. onward. Greg Buck, yep, joining us on Friday mornings and, of course, still every weekday morning for Matt and Air on Air.
Mm-hmm.
But we say all this mostly because it makes him really uncomfortable. It makes him feel like we're ushering him out the door when we are most decidedly not doing that.
That's fine. As long as I get a breakfast sandwich on the way out, I'm good. I'm good.
Ooh. You, yeah, get breakfast sandwiches down there?
No, no. Oh. I mean, I get them from places who sell them, but they're not like, there's not like a hot, fresh breakfast. Could you, Pat, could you imagine if there was a breakfast buffet here? Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be so happy.
Oh, but now I get to tell that story again. And again, apologies for folks that have heard it before, but my first radio job out of college was at what used to be WAQE up in Rice Lake. And I was a one-man newsroom up there, and the station manager said, you're now going to be doing a talk show. You're going to be doing it from Heckle's Big Steer, which was inside Cedar Mall in Rice Lake. And he said, you're going to drive down after the 7:30 news, and you're going to host a talk show there at 8 o'clock from the breakfast counter. Like, do I have to? And that's a lot of work and all that. And he's like, it'll be fun. You're going to have good guests and you're going to get breakfast out of the deal. I'm like, okay, fine. 1 month later, the boss calls me in, waves a piece of paper. What is this? And I go, I don't know. He says, it's a bill for a whole bunch of breakfasts from Big Steer. And I said, yeah, you said I could get breakfast out of the deal. He's like, I meant you could get yourself breakfast out of the deal. I'm like, what? No, this is now part of the deal. If I'm doing a morning talk show where I got to drive to the other side of town quickly by 8 o'clock, I'm getting breakfast at the end of it.
Let me ask you. So you only got one breakfast?
No. I got a month's worth of breakfast when the bill came.
But, okay. So okay. My point is, so this was what, the 80s, right?
This would be 1986. Yes.
1986. So if we're talking about breakfast in 1986 up north.
Yes.
What was the bill, like $14?
It was pretty low comparatively. Yes. I mean,
what,
it was
a cheapskate.
No, he wasn't. He was surprised to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to imagine with a big cigar. What's this in front of me?
Oh, no. And I will never say an unkind word about my first boss there, because this happened, you know, after I'd been at the station for, you know, 6 months or so. He hired me right out of college. I worked for 4 weeks and then was out for 2 months with a burst appendix with complications. Oofers. Needed, yeah, 3 surgeries. So two paychecks, you know, 2 biweekly paychecks, as I'm looking at my second ever paycheck and I'm seeing how much they take out for health insurance, which again was like almost 100% coverage, not 80-20 coverage, like 100% coverage.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this and I'm going, I'm young, I'm healthy, I don't need health insurance. I made a mental note to cancel it on the following Monday. On that Sunday, I got sick as a dog and eventually had the first of 3 surgeries and a hospital bill that, again, by 1986 standards, this was huge, $20,000. Would have completely bankrupt us. I paid $25 for the cable TV that was in my hospital room. That was it, kids. That back then, boys and girls, was when we took care of our employees. And that station manager, he could have said, you know, this isn't working out, we're letting you go, or whatever. He kept my paychecks coming those 2 months while I was out.
That's amazing.
And then eventually gave me a show with free breakfast. Little did he know, which who knew it would lead to now something here where I'm doing a breakfast show, but I'm making my own damn breakfast every morning. But still, it works.
I love the idea. Like, I'm going to cancel health insurance on Monday. Ah, I got a tummy ache.
It was. I shudder at what might have happened otherwise. Yeah, it's just, yeah. Oh. So again, my eternal thanks to the good bosses out there who take care of their people. Still ahead, we're going to have Sean O'Malley on Markets and Money. Joe Zepecki is coming up as well. Another check-in with meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Remember to sign up for our newsletters at upnorthnewswi.com. More after the Midwest Farm Report here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.